Good day, and welcome to the Cigna Autism Awareness Series conference call. Today's call is being recorded. Now, at this time, I'll turn the conference over to Kristen Martin. Please go ahead.
Thank you, James. Welcome, and thank you for calling into Cigna's Autism Awareness Series. My name is Kristen Martin, and I am a care manager for the autism team at Cigna. Due to the format of this call, you will not be able to ask questions during the teleconference. However, at the end of this conference, you will be transferred into a brief five-question survey in which we are requesting your feedback regarding your experience in today's seminar. After the survey, you will be able to ask questions on today's presentation. A handout for today's seminar is available online at www.cigna.com/autism. Scroll to the current topic section in the middle of your page and click on today's topic labeled Increasing Your Child's Social Interactions with Peers, Practical Approaches for Parents. Please note that not all policies cover today's topic. For more specific information, if your policy covers topics discussed in today's seminar, please contact the autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing Dr. Melissa Schweitzer. Dr. Schweitzer is a licensed psychologist and board-certified behavior analyst specializing in applied behavior analysis and developmental disabilities. Dr. Schweitzer received her doctorate degree in educational psychology from the University of Southern California and has over 30 years of experience working with individuals with challenging behaviors in a wide range of settings, including home, school, residential settings, and vocational day programs. She currently serves as president and executive director of Behavioral Support Partnership in California. Dr. Schweitzer, thank you for being here today. You are welcome to start your presentation.
Thank you, and I want to say hello and good afternoon to everybody. I want to first thank Kristen and the Cigna Autism team for inviting me to speak today on social skills. I'm so honored to do so. I also want to extend a warm welcome to parents, colleagues, and other professionals attending today. I hope those attending will be able to access the slide presentation and follow along. I've embedded many photos into the presentation that will illustrate the concepts that I'm discussing. So like the old saying goes, a picture is worth a thousand words. So when I was developing this presentation, I was thinking about gearing it towards parents that don't have access to formal social skills training programs that are offered typically in schools or ABA providers. So it's really going out to those parents that perhaps live in remote areas of the country or, again, do not have formal access to these types of programs. So what I'd like to do is start on slide two for those of you that are following along. And I want to start with a quick overview of today's presentation. So I will be reviewing the new DSM-5 diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder and then speaking about the underlying social deficits. I will also discuss the importance of teaching social skills and how we go about identifying which particular social skills to teach. I will also give suggestions to increase the likelihood of success when you do your training. And last, I hope to leave you with a set of practical strategies that you can implement at home with your child. I'm going on to the next slide. Autism spectrum disorder, as of May 2013, is the official diagnostic label used by the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders, often referred to as the DSM. The DSM is the guide that doctors and psychologists use to diagnose symptoms. So let's take a look at the diagnostic criteria. The first one is persistent deficits in social communication and social interaction across multiple contexts. So there's deficits in social or emotional reciprocity, and what that means is there's difficulty establishing and maintaining that back and forth conversation or interaction. There's also reduced interest or sometimes lack of interest in others or in the emotions of others. And in some cases, some children just fail to engage with other people. sometimes individuals with ASD are often considered egocentric. There's also deficits in nonverbal communication. So individuals with ASD may have abnormal eye contact, or they may have the lack of eye contact altogether, or they may have postures or facial expressions that appear abnormal. Individuals also with ASD don't typically pick up on nonverbal cues from others, so a child who is with a peer might not notice that the peer is looking away or stepping away to indicate they want to end the conversation. Or a peer who rolls their eyes, that cue might not be picked up by a child with ASD, and that might be, that child may be indicating they're bored with the conversation. There's also deficits in developing and maintaining and understanding relationships. There has a, for individuals with ASD, there's a tendency for wanting to play by my rules. If they do have play skills, they have very fixed ideas on how to play, or they may prefer to be alone and not interact at all with other kids. Next slide. The second diagnostic criterion is restrictive or repetitive patterns of behavior, interest, or activities. And there has to be at least two out of the four behavioral categories to diagnose this. So one is stereotyped or repetitive movements or use of objects or speech. So this might pertain to an individual who has echolalia, which is repeating back what was just said. Or it could involve such behaviors as hand flapping, spinning objects, repeating back movie scripts. The second area is insistence on sameness or inflexible adherence to routines or ritualized patterns. So you may find that some children may tantrum because their parent takes a different route home, or if they can't eat McDonald's French fries, they may have a tantrum. Or they only want French fries from McDonald's. Or a child may tantrum because the parent doesn't have both hands on the wheel as they're driving the child to school. The next area is highly restricted or fixated interests that are abnormal in intensity. And this pertains to some examples of this particular category are maybe a child who only wants to wear a yellow shirt to school, or a child who watches Toy Story 5 to 10 times a day. And the last category is hyper or hyporeactivity to sensory input. So for some children with ASD, they have a high pain threshold, or they may have adverse reactions to certain sounds. You often see some kids, when they hear certain sounds, putting their fingers in their ears. Or some children may like certain types of smells where they go up and smell someone's hair, or they like to switch lights on and off. Next slide. So what is different about the new DSM diagnosis? Well, first of all, communication impairments are no longer a separate diagnostic criterion. It's now combined with social impairments. And second, this term, autism spectrum disorder, is truly a umbrella term now. So in the previous DSM-4, there were separate diagnostic labels for autistic disorder, Asperger's, PDD, and childhood disintegrative disorder. Rett syndrome is the only category that has remained as a separate entity. And last, the other thing that's new for this diagnosis is there are now severity levels 1, 2, and 3, and this is based on the amount of support an individual may need. Looking at the prevalence of autism, the CDC, or Center for Disease and Control, as of March 2012, estimated that 1 in 88 children are diagnosed with ASD. Next slide. So what are social skills? They are social behaviors which within a given situation predict social outcomes or there are social rules or expectations that enable us to connect with others. So they give us the rules, and they tell us what to do when a child's invited to a birthday party, or they might tell us what to do or guide us when your child asks someone to play and the child says no. Next slide. Social skills are critical. The knowledge of social rules allows us to navigate social situations and relationships throughout our lifetime. So children with good social skills are more likely to make and maintain friendships. They're more likely to have intimate relationships in their lifetime. They're more likely to participate in recreational activities outside of the home. They have increased confidence and happiness. And as adults, they're able to obtain and maintain jobs. Next slide. Social impairments as a defining characteristic of autism can have devastating consequences without intervention. Some of these include loneliness, increased rates of bullying, anxiety, depression, and oftentimes individuals with ASD are at risk for or they don't understand safety risks. For example, they may not know how to respond to strangers who are overly friendly, so they don't pick up on the cues or adapt their behavior quickly enough, thus putting themselves at risk. Next slide. So this photo illustrates the consequences of poor social skills. You see a child just sitting by himself on the playground and looking out. Next slide. So why is it so hard for children with ASD to connect with their peers or to make friends? Let me go over some underlying issues. So children with ASD sometimes take things literally, such as the phrase, "It's raining cats and dogs," or if a parent says, "Hi, Honey Bear," the child might respond, "I'm not Honey Bear, I'm Joe." They have difficulty understanding that two words that sound the same have different meanings. For example, the word board, B-O-R-D, versus the word B-O-R-D, board. Some of them also have limited use of language. They speak in short phrases, or they may speak in full sentences but leave off words, or they don't comment on aspects of the environment. They may focus on the wrong cues. Some individuals with ASD have overselectivity, and this refers to focusing only on one aspect of an object while ignoring others. This is sometimes referred to as tunnel vision. So, for example, a child may greet others only if they have a red shirt on, or a child may choose only to eat foods that are yellow, or a child will only eat with a spoon if it's metal or if it has a flower at the tip of the handle. Children with ASD may also not respond to multiple cues, so that if a peer asks them to throw the blue ball, they may pick up a ball of a different color, not understanding that cue, blue. Next slide. So hopefully all of you are viewing the slideshow and can see this picture. So what do you see in this slide besides a messy closet? So how many of you see Woody from Toy Story? So next slide. A child who has issues with overselectivity sees mainly Woody. Next slide. When you see the FedEx logo, how many of you see the arrow? Next slide. Children with overselectivity issues mainly see the arrow and not the logo. Next slide. Children with ASD don't understand rules of reciprocal conversation. So when someone asks them a question, they may not know how to respond or to answer the question or how to comment, or they may not understand how to end a conversation. They also might misperceive or misunderstand social cues of the situation. Oftentimes, children with autism lack play skills, either pretend play or cooperative play. So if a child can't play, this severely limits their interaction with peers. And play has been found to be an important predictor of social behavior. Children with ASD do not understand or pick up on body language, so they may not understand what a frown is or a child moving away when they're trying to talk to them. They may not pick up on other children's feelings or their point of view. This is often called perspective taking, so a child might not be able to put themselves in other people's shoes. Or they may not understand or pick up on situational cues. For example, in a men's restroom, they may not know or understand which urinal to use if there are more than two people in the public bathroom. Or contextual cues. Children with ASD, or children or adults, when they meet somebody the first time, they may ask too many personal questions like, are you married? How much do you weigh? Or sometimes they may comment rudely on someone's physical imperfections, such as they may say, oh, you're fat, or oh, you stink. There may be, next slide, there may be a lack of understanding of personal boundaries, so that a child may stand too close when talking or stand too far away. Or the child may engage in a one-sided conversation about a narrow or unusual interest. So you might have a child who tries to talk to his peers about jet propulsion engines and goes on for a half an hour, or the child may talk about dinosaurs and start talking about every dinosaur that's ever lived on the earth for, you know, up to an hour. There's also a lack of flexibility, so a child may only want to play by their set of rules. There's lack of initiations with others. There's a preference to be alone. And oftentimes, there's a history of failure. We call this learned helplessness. So children try to avoid interaction because of their repeated failed attempts. So social skills are necessary. Physical proximity to children alone doesn't lead to behavior change, nor does maturity. Children, as they get older, don't automatically learn these skills over time. The skills need to be taught and taught across multiple environments. Next slide. So where do we start? We want to do an assessment. So we want to observe your child's skills as compared to his or her peers. So what are his strengths? What does he or she need to learn? We can use formal social skills assessments or checklists. And in the back of your slide presentation, I have put asterisk next to two books that have some simple checklist for identifying social skills deficits. Next slide. We want to narrow down the behavioral skill that we work on. We want to select a specific behavioral skill to ensure that you and your child are successful. So we don't want to tackle everything, so we narrow down to one skill at a time. That way we can, as a behaviorist, we want to take data. We want to see, we want to be able to make sure that the behavior we're working on is changing so that we take objective data on how often the child takes turns or how often they initiate with a peer. And then we evaluate, does it change over time? Next slide. In choosing your target behavior or skill, these are a few criteria we try to set up. One is that the behavior or skill must be observable, meaning that it has to be something that we can see or hear. That way we can count it. And it also has to be a behavior or skill that we can describe in very specific terms. And we do that so that everyone that's working with your child in this social skill will be able to know when it occurs. So, for example, we might define turn-taking as defined as handing the dice to the person on his right after he's moved his marker to the correct number of spaces on the board. Each turn, starting with the rolling the dice and ending with handing the dice to the person to his right, is counted. We want to make sure that the behavior and skill is measurable. So with a definition like that above that I just referenced of turn-taking, we could count how many times the child takes a turn. And we can measure other types of skills. We can measure duration of a skill. The most important thing is we want to determine whether or not our training's working. So, for example, if we're working on initiations with peers, maybe at the beginning of training your child only initiates one time, but after several months of training, we see that your child initiates five times during recess. So we measure it. Next slide. We want to think about the following question. So I referenced being observable, and we want to have a narrow enough skill so that we're successful. And the skill that we're working on should be something that your child's capable and interested in working on. And also, we want the skill to be something that you as a parent feel confident about. We encourage starting out with something simple first. That way you're more motivated to work on it, and it's easier for you to work on it. Next slide. We want to choose skills which are effective, meaning that they open the door to more opportunities in the future. Skills that are meaningful, they enrich your child's quality of life, and functional, meaning they can be used every day and they can be reinforced in the natural environments. Next slide. So we might teach these kinds of skills: requesting, question asking, commenting, asking for help, complimenting, responding to social questions, joining in play or conversation, initiating play or conversation. Or we might look at the types of activities engaged in with peers, the length of time your child engages with peers, or the number of peers they interact with. Next slide. So now I'd like to discuss some strategies that will enhance your training. It'll make your training easier. Our intervention strategies are based on the principles of applied behavioral analysis and are evidence-based. Another word for saying they're scientifically proven. So let me go over a few of these strategies. First of all, we want to teach skills that occur in natural environments where your child comes in contact with other kids. Those are on the playground, at recess, Girl Scout troops, Boy Scout troops, any place where there's kids. We want to make sure that everyone's on the same page so that we can ensure consistency. So we want to make sure that if teachers or Cub Scout leaders are working on these skills, we're all on the same page and doing the same thing. We also want to make sure that we provide as much practice as possible, therefore maximizing the number of learning opportunities for teaching social skills. We want to use language that everyone understands, and we want to avoid psychological jargon. We want to use your child's strengths and interests. So if your child's great at chess, we might want to find other kids with similar interest. Next slide. We want to know what makes your child anxious so that we could avoid these situations or either set up coping strategies for your child. So maybe your child's afraid of dogs or they don't like to be around loud sounds, so we might avoid those situations. We also want to match your child's skills in terms of their language, reading, and writing abilities with appropriate interventions. And we want to identify any sensory issues that may interfere with social interactions. For example, if your child doesn't like to be touched, we want to make sure that other children don't touch your child. And most importantly, we want to begin early. At our clinic in Garden Grove, we start our social skills as young as 2.5 or 3 years of age. Next slide. We want to identify mutually reinforcing activities that both your child and the peer can participate in. So if they like Angry Birds, or if they like putting puzzles together, or they like computer games, that's what we would use. We want to make sure that the skills are socially valid, or in other words, it's based on the age of your child, the culture in which he lives, and things that peers are doing that he's comes in contact with. We want to use a concept called behavioral momentum, and this involves making a series of easy tasks or requests to your child and then interspersing one difficult task followed by easy task. So if your child responds to the easy task or request, they're more likely to respond to that difficult one. And we want to teach one skill at a time and build upon success. And we want to provide lots of repetition and practice. We want to have mutually reinforcing activities. So, again, finding something that is interesting and motivating to both children. So this helps maintain the proximity of the kids, helps them keep interacting with one another, ensuring that they'll have fun, and it also increases the likelihood that they'll want to have another interaction in the future. Next slide. We want to use prompts to teach skills. So a prompt is just another way of saying assistance. So we could verbally prompt, which is telling a child what to do, or we could provide a gesture, or we could model where we demonstrate something, or we could use a physical prompt, which is lightly touching the child to lead him towards the desired behavior. Some other strategies include reinforcement. It's so important to reinforce the behaviors you want to see more of. We want to use natural reinforcers that ensure skills will be maintained over time, so praise, or just the pure act of throwing a frisbee could be reinforcing to the child, or getting to eat the cookies that the peer and your child just baked. We want to provide support to the child in natural environments, so we encourage the use of peer mediators or peer support, which I will get into in more detail later. And last, we want to generalize to other settings and people once the skills are learned. So let's move on now, the next slide, and look at some of the practical strategies to increase social interaction. So this is just the list. Peer mediated intervention, and that's simply having peers help, having peers support your child. The use of scripts, conversation starters, video modeling, priming, cooperative arrangements, and supported play dates. Next slide. Peer-mediated intervention. So this is using socially competent peers to model and reinforce social behavior of children with ASD. And there have been studies that have shown that this is quite effective, and peers can be taught how to initiate a conversation with a child with autism, or how to respond to their conversation, or how to comment. The peers can be taught how to use compliments with the child with ASD, how to give them instructions, or even how to record the behavior or reinforce the peer with ASD. In a study by Kasseri et al., children with ASD in grades 1 to 5, they were able to show that training the classmates resulted in an increase in the rate of initiations and rate of responding for the children with autism. They also showed that the children with autism spent less time alone on the playground and were even named as a friend more often by their peers. So there's a lot of advantages of using peers. They're readily available. They can be easily trained. They're available at lunchtime, recess, playgrounds, after-school programs, Cub Scouts, and they provide good role models. You can implement this with pairs or in small groups as well. The next strategy, next slide, is the use of scripts. And a script is simply a model of what to say or do in a specific social situation. So we could write out on a note card, a piece of paper, or even draw an outline of what to do in particular social situations. And this script is presented to a child. Once they've learned how to perform that particular behavior, then the script is stated out systematically. So a script might outline what to say when you ring the doorbell at your friend's house, or it might say what to do when you invite a child to play cars, or it might say what to do when you see a friend at the park. When developing scripts, you want to make sure that you use language that's appropriate to your child's ability, and the content should be age appropriate. We want to prompt the child to use the script, and of course we want to reinforce your child for using it. Next slide. So there are commercially available scripts, or you can make your own. Next slide. So once your child has learned how to perform the desired social behavior using a script, we want to fade it out, and we do that from the end to the beginning. So if we had on a note card a script on how to ask a friend to play ball, the first card might be let's play ball, and we use that script until the child can perform the behavior to a mastery criterion. Once that's accomplished, then we're going to fade to let's play. That would be simply what's on the script card. And then once your child can still perform the behavior with that faded script, then we keep fading. So the next card might just say let's, and then the next step would be there's simply a blank card, and then that would be followed by removing the script card, and then hopefully your child would still be performing the desired behavior. Conversation starters. This is an easy way to prompt social interaction and conversation. So basically what we do is we provide a visual. It could be a photo, a remnant of something, a souvenir, and basically you have your child show that particular visual at school, at recess, on the playground, at after school program. And the visual provides a cue for the peer, the teacher, or the parent to ask questions, and then the child can respond. So some examples might be a movie ticket stub, or a favorite rapper, a rapper from a favorite piece of candy, or it could be a photo of your child surfing, or, you know, we are close to Disneyland, so it might be Mickey Mouse ears. So just anything that would cue conversation. Next slide. Video modeling. This is a very effective tool in teaching children with ASD new skills. So basically what takes place is the child watches a model on a video perform the desired social behavior. And then following the video, the child is then told, do the same, or let's do the same, or do what you saw in the video. The child is then reinforced for following the model, and they practice it until the desired behavior is learned. So this is especially beneficial tool for children who learn visually and for those who enjoy watching TV or who are able to understand cause and effect. We want to, next slide, we would use video modeling if the child had some familiarity with TV watching, which, of course, many, many do, and if your child has attention skills and if they can imitate both nonverbal and verbal skills. We also want to start with basic behaviors first, such as greeting, saying hello, saying goodbye, maybe some simple commenting like wow, or give a high five sign, or maybe turn taking. And you can easily develop a video film yourself. You can use a child or an adult model. You would want to use a blank open space with few distractions and make sure that the target behavior that you want to teach is very salient or made very clear in the video, and only use necessary props. Next slide. We can also use video self-modeling, and this is where a child watches him or herself engaging in the desired behavior, and then they are expected to perform that desired behavior in the natural environment. In one study by Bellini et al., preschoolers watched an edited footage of their appropriate social behavior, and then they practiced in the natural environment, and their social interactions increased. Next slide. We can also use portable video modeling to teach social skills. In a study by Grossberg and Charlotte just this year, children with ASD watch videos on an Apple iTouch, and they watch the video of children asking other children to play even after one or two rejections. And what they found is that all three children in the study had persistence in asking multiple peers to play. And the authors went on to suggest that this was a really easy treatment and it had a coolness factor because you used an iPad or an iTouch. Next strategy is priming. And priming involves previewing information or an activity with a child before the child comes in contact with the actual event or activity. The advantages of priming are that it helps the child familiarize the material, the rule, the activity or game, or appropriate behavior before it's used in real life. It increases your child's confidence, minimizes probability of behaviors occurring, it introduces predictability, may reduce anxiety and stress, and serves as a reminder for your child, and overall increases their success. So the priming statement should be short and concise. You can prime the day before, the day of, or immediately before the activity or the event. And then you want to make sure that you reinforce the child for performing the desired behavior or attempting to perform the desired behavior. So some examples of what we would use priming for is transitioning from a preferred to a non-preferred activity. So we might say something like, you can put the car down the ramp three more times, and then when we're all done, we can pick up another toy three more times, and then we're all done two more times. Or we can prime a child about the expected behavior in upcoming activities. So we might say, remember when you walk up to a peer, say hi, or okay, we can play Play-Doh, but the Play-Doh stays in your hands or on the table. Remember to wait for your friend to take a turn like we practiced. Next slide. This is cooperative arrangements, and these are activity or games with multiple components that create interdependency. So in other words, children need each other to complete the task or a game. So by dividing up pieces of Mr. Potato Head or components of a task such as decorating or baking cookies, we can increase social interaction. Children learn to request pieces or components from one another. They learn to share or to take turns. Next slide. This slide simply gives some suggestions for what you could use for cooperative arrangements. In the sake of time, I'm just going to skip this slide and go on. And last, I want to talk about supportive play dates. And supportive play dates incorporate many of the strategies I've already discussed. So when we have supportive play dates, we're more likely to be successful. The activities are fun for your child, and the kids are more likely to gain new skills. If the play date is unstructured, unsupported, there's less likely to be social interaction and less invitations to hang out again. So let's look at what's involved. Children should be engaged in the activities together, so they should be close to one another. There should be reciprocity, meaning that there should be that give-and-take interaction with each other. So if a child tries to initiate with adults, we're going to redirect them back to their peer. And we should, as parents or adults, fade ourselves out as quickly as possible. Both children should participate and have a role in the activity, and we want to make sure that both children have fun. So the activity should be motivating to both children so that they want to spend time together in the future. So in picking your play date, how do you go about choosing? you want to identify children with similar interests as well as those who might have an interest in playing with your child. So you could ask your child's teacher, you could observe your child on the playground at school, you could observe your child in the community, or maybe you talk to neighbors and family friends. And next slide, we want to make sure that we have a plan. I can't express how important this is. You just don't want to go in and wing the play date. You have to have a plan. You want to prepare the materials ahead of time, and you want to have a structured activity. And again, select the activity that you know everyone will have fun with. And initially, the activity should be short. You want to select an activity that your child's already familiar with to promote success. And we want to explain the rules and what you're working on to all the children. So we're practicing taking turns today. Next slide. We want to avoid downtime, so keep the activity short. And if there's a break, make sure there's an activity plan. So if you decorate a cookies, make sure you have an activity while the cookies are baking for 10 to 15 minutes. So you could play Mr. Potato Head, or you could jump on the trampoline. So just have lots of choices available. And make sure there's a concrete ending time for hanging out. So we recommend about a 30-minute play day when you're first starting out. We also want to make sure that you set up cooperative arrangements during your play date. So make sure that the children are going to need each other. So the children can bring something to the play date, and this encourages exchanging, helping, requesting. Next slide. And we want to prepare our child for the activity or the social behavior, have them practice ahead of time so they could practice eye contact, greetings, or sharing of the snack. Again, can't say this enough, find an activity that's mutually reinforcing to both children, and again, set up those cooperative arrangements, like you would divide out the games or the toys or divide out the baking goods ahead of time. And last, you want to evaluate how your play date went. You know, did it run smoothly? If not, you want to, find out what needed to be improved on next time. So I want to end with saying that I hope that those attending today were able to come away with some strategies that you can use with your child to increase social skills, and I want to say good luck and thank you so much. And I'll turn it back over to Kristen.
Thank you. To help us evaluate and improve our program, please complete the following short survey. If you are a Cigna employee, we ask that you please refrain from participating in the survey. After the last question, there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions. Your individual responses will be kept confidential. Please answer by pressing the star key followed by the number that best corresponds with your choice. Now for our first question. This session provided me with education on increasing my child's social interactions with peers. Press star 1 for strongly agree, star 2 for agree, star 3 for disagree, or star 4 for strongly disagree. Now for our next question. This session educated me on the importance of social skills for a child diagnosed with autism. Press star 1 for strongly agree, star 2 for agree, star 3 for disagree, or star 4 for strongly disagree. Now for our next question. Overall, this session met my expectations. Please select one of the following responses. Star 1 for strongly agree, star 2 for agree, star 3 for disagree, or star 4 for strongly disagree. Now for our next question. I'd recommend this program to others. Press star 1 if you agree, or star 2 if you do not agree. And now for our last survey question. Please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with autism. Press star 1 for I am the parent of a child with autism, star 2 for I am a family member of a child with autism, or star 3 for other. Thank you for your feedback and for participating in our program. If you'd like to make any additional comments to help us improve this program or have any questions on today's topic, press star 1 to have your line opened into the conference. And at this time, there are no phone questions.
Thank you so much for attending, and thank you, Dr. Schweitzer, for providing such wonderful insights. Again, if you have questions about therapies discussed today, please contact the autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Please be sure to mark your calendars to join our next Autism Awareness Seminar next month, July 11th, at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, when we will be discussing managing challenging behaviors. Thank you, and have a great day.